It is Monday, October 7th, 2013, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Eureka Springs' original Ozark Folk Festival presents a live recording of Michael Jonathan's Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour, Saturday, October 26th in the City Auditorium. Guests include Michael Martin Murphy and Leroy Troy and the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band. This recording will be aired on public radio and television stations, as well as the Armed Forces Radio Network. Tickets available at theodd.org. Ahead on this Monday edition of Ozarks, an algae with a funny nickname, Didymo, has been found in the White River watershed. The plan to keep it from spreading has been put into motion. And writing a book through facilitated communication, Holly Fields explains how her nonverbal daughter, Stephanie R. Marks, wrote the book Paula's Journal, Surviving Autism. First, there was movement Friday on a possible solution for the teacher insurance crisis in Arkansas. Premiums are expected to rise by nearly 50% if the legislature doesn't find a solution to the problem. A memo being circulated among lawmakers proposes both short- and long-term structural modifications to make the program solvent. Representative James McLean, chair of the state's House Education Committee, says the solution's responsibility is shared.
The state will enter in some short-term money. The school districts, the Department of Ed, and other educational stakeholders will also come to the table with some money as well. And then there will probably have to be a premium increase for public school employees, albeit a whole lot smaller than it would have been with the 50% increases.
However, Governor Mike Beebe has said a special session will only be called if a consensus emerges among legislators. Arkansas State Police is in the process of adopting an electronic ticketing system for all 12 state police troops across the state. Bill Sadler, public information officer for the state police, says the differences between the traditional handwritten ticket and the new digital ticketing system are like the differences between night and day.
I mean, we're talking about a 77-year-old process of a ticket book that is about the size of a small notebook that you would be accustomed to seeing in a store that literally has more than 100 fields of information that has to be filled out depending on the circumstances of the violation, versus sitting at a keyboard and being able to, from a pick list, create a ticket that is legible and one that can automatically be transferred to the local court.
Sadler says the electronic tickets are already in limited use at Troop K in the Hot Springs area and at the Hope Police Department. The system has been in development for about 2 years, a period during which Sadler says it was fully field tested for any bugs or stability issues.
There were several instances where we brought troopers in and just said, hey, you know, try to make it fail. Do what you can in any circumstance that you can imagine to see if it can fail. And so, you know, we've relied upon troopers to test it, use it in the field, find where the weaknesses are, and then bring it back to the drawing board, let the IT people overcome those challenges that the trooper found, and then make it better. So it hasn't just been something that we've bought off the shelf and put out there in the field and then turn the switch on and say, okay, let's see what happens. No, it's been tested thoroughly, and we expect it to be a very seamless process.
Sadler says the electronic ticketing system will allow for greater efficiencies and legibility for everyone involved, including troopers, court clerks, and for those who get a ticket. The system will be fully operational beginning January 1st. The Fayetteville School District already has two schools operating on a continuous learning calendar, commonly referred to as a year-round school. Later this month, Owl Creek could join Happy Hollow and Asbell Elementary Schools with an extended school calendar. The Fayetteville School Board is expected to vote on the issue at its October meeting. Kristen Champion, Owl Creek principal, says the challenge to a continuous learning calendar won't involve a very drastic change to the school calendar.
Continuous learning calendar just means that the long summer break that students typically have, which is about a 3-month summer break, is broken up, and they have actually about 8 weeks in the summer, and then they have 1 week each quarter that they are also off of school. So it breaks the school year up into about 9-week sessions.
Champion says school officials have been exploring the idea of switching to a continuous learning calendar for about 3 years, involving parent and staff focus groups that observed other year-round schools and addressed concerns like parents having children on different schedules at different schools. But overall, Champion says the outcomes of the focus groups and committees that developed Owl Creek's continuous learning proposed calendar have been positive. In addition to potentially higher morale among students and teachers with more breaks throughout the school year, optional intersessions will offer students additional opportunities to learn through the summer months.
Intersession is learning, but it's not like your typical school learning. It's more based on interests that students have, things that students might call clubs, activities that kids would get to participate in, like pottery or, you know, things like that, to learn stuff that typically would not be taught during the regular school day. So it's a way to extend their learning, extend their experiences, and give them a broader base of knowledge, which helps to support the learning goals that we have on regular school days.
If the plan is approved by the school board at its meeting October 24th, the continuous learning calendar will go into effect at the start of the next school year. Champion says that if parents don't want their children to participate in the continuous learning calendar, there would be opportunity for parents to make transfer requests prior to the plan being put into action. Arkansas Highway Commissioner John Burkhalter announced Friday he's resigning from the commission, as well as three other volunteer boards in the state, to focus on his campaign for lieutenant governor. Burkhalter is the only Democrat, as of yet, to enter the 2014 lieutenant governor's race. Following a Republican primary, he will face either State Representative Andy Mayberry of Hensley or Charlie Collins of Fayetteville in the general election. Current Lieutenant Governor Mark Darr has not declared his future political plans following his withdrawal from the race for the 4th District Congressional seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. While the federal partial shutdown has closed military-based commissaries, Bentonville Bay Sam's Club is offering temporary shopping relief to military personnel and retirees. The Warehouse Club Network stores will give temporary passes to those who show military ID or proof of past or present military service. According to a statement by the company, temporary passes will be offered until the U.S. government resumes domestic commissary operations. The Razorback volleyball team reached a landmark 400th program win Friday night as the Razorbacks rallied in the fifth set for a win on the road against South Carolina. Arkansas also won at home Sunday afternoon, defeating Auburn in four sets in Barnhill Arena. With those wins, the volleyball team is 11-5 on the season, 4-1 in conference play. Next match will be Friday as the Razorbacks host Alabama, followed by a road match Sunday afternoon in Knoxville against Tennessee. The Razorback soccer team didn't have quite as good a weekend as the volleyball team. Arkansas fell at home Friday night to LSU by a score of 5-3. The team did turn its fortunes around last night with a win against Mississippi State. Arkansas soccer now 9-4 on the 2013 season, 2-3 in SEC play. The soccer team back in action with a road trip Friday to College Station, Texas to take on Texas A&M. Clear tonight, lows around 41 in northwest Arkansas, upper 40s tonight in the Arkansas River Valley. Highs tomorrow, 73 to 78 with sunny conditions. Tomorrow night, clear, lows from 44 to 50. This is a Monday edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Late this morning, an announcement in Rogers that Redman and Associates will open a new manufacturing and distribution facility in Rogers that will employ more than 70 people. The job's expected to pay about $18 an hour. Governor Mike Beebe, representatives of Walmart, were also on hand to make the announcement. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda is at the announcement. She'll have more details on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. A nuisance algae nicknamed Didymo has been documented in the White River watershed. And as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, conservationists have launched a public campaign to make sure it doesn't spread.
Rainbow trout play tag in a shallow waterfall on Roaring River Spring Branch, southeast of Cassville, Missouri. The turquoise water is so clear it magnifies the fish and their crystalline habitat. Chilly spring-fed water rushes over gravel and rocks, pulsing with lush green algae, common in Ozark streams. But a new predator algae could be lurking in this stream bed undetected. Paul Spurgeon is manager of the Missouri Department of Conservation Trout Hatchery here at Roaring River State Park. He works in a restored 70-year-old Civilian Conservation Corps limestone complex next to a dozen spring-fed hatchery pools churning with tiny trout.
Roaring River State Park is one of four trout parks in Missouri. It's spring-fed, and the spring puts out about 20 million gallons of water a day, about 58 degrees, which creates a perfect habitat for trout fishing. This area is stocked every day with trout, and people come here to fish.
And therein lies the danger. Anglers who have fished in other places can carry algae cells on their waders and fishing gear, potentially infecting this stream with a nuisance single-cell algae, scientifically known as Didymosphenia geminata, Didymo for short, or D. geminata in the literature. Didymo thrives in cold water environments like the tailwaters beneath Bull Shoals Dam in Arkansas.
And the reason the dams are a good place for this to happen is because the water that are discharging is coming off the bottom of the lake and it's colder, so that's what creates that trout water below Table Rock and below Bull Shoals.
Didymo has been documented in 18 states, primarily in Colorado, Montana, and Washington. The organism's also infected streams in New Zealand, Europe, and Asia. Once it takes over, Didymo can dominate.
Before it blooms, it's just kind of will be like a little spot on a rock. But it puts out a stalk to when it reproduces. And these stalks, it's also called rock snot because these stalks will get real sticky, and that's how it adheres to the substrate of the river. And is able, as longer it's there, the more that these stalks will start coming out. And it's actually the stalks that do that. Eventually, it will just blanket over the whole bottom of the river, which disrupts the life cycle of a lot of macroinvertebrates, caddisflies, that kind of stuff, that in the food chain. So like a wild trout population, it would severely devastate those, because they would not be able to go from fry up to adulthood.
The biofilm can grow to become 8 inches thick, smothering the life out of streams. According to the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, Didymo is now present in the White River below Beaver Dam, the Norfolk tailwaters on the North Fork of the White River, and Greer's Ferry tailwaters on the Little Red River. Paul Spurgeon says it was first detected in the United States more than 30 years ago.
It was first discovered kind of like in the mid-80s. It's naturally occurring in the northern part sections of North America, and it thrives in conditions that are, it takes cold water, and it takes a pH of about 7, and the water has to be oxygen rich. And so with trout waters, the spring water is just naturally perfect because of the limestone. The karst topography is made of limestone. That brings your pH up to the correct areas. We're 58 degrees here year-round, so any the cold water trout streams are at risk, whereas a regular river wouldn't be. It's too warm.
This hatchery contributes just a fraction of the White River watershed's wildlife-related economy in both Arkansas and Missouri. $2.8 billion in revenue in 2011. And a nuisance algae like Didymo places both states at risk.
When you take an invasive species and put it where it doesn't have other things that keep it naturally, they always explode. Same thing with zebra mussels and that kind of thing when they get out of their natural habitat. So the invasive species are always worse when they get into an area that's fresh and brand new because they outcompete every other thing that's there.
Roaring River State Park Hatchery produces 500,000 trout annually, with half going to stock this river system alone. Up and down the banks, dozens of fly fishermen try their luck on the fish. But soon, they'll also see scientists sampling the stream bed.
We have plans as well we're going to go through in the spring. We were going to do it this fall, but we had a flood, so we put it off. But we're going to go through and collect rocks just to see if those cells are out there and just haven't shown themselves. Because there's a theory that it could already be out there, it just hasn't bloomed. So we want to get a benchmark to say it's either we have it, we know it's here, or we know it's not there. So we're going to be doing that in the spring.
In the meantime, agencies and park staff have been working to educate the public on how to prevent the spread of Didymo.
What we call wader wash stations here in the park. And that has, you can walk into these with your waders, and it's got a 5% salt solution in there in a brush, and you can actually clean your waders before you go into the river, and that will, the salt solution will kill that. The other thing that we do is what we call the check clean and dry, and that's when you've been to another area, when you get done, you check your equipment, make sure that there's nothing hanging on you, you dry it out, you can use a chlorine solution, just household bleach, weak solution, like 2%. You can clean that, you can clean it with dish detergent, and then put it out in the sunlight, let your equipment dry before you go move to another area.
Algae blooms are often linked to excessive nutrients in waterways, but Didymo reportedly seems to thrive in pristine waters, able to fix small amounts of phosphorus and iron. Eradicating it from aquatic environments is impossible given current science. So for now, prevention is the best measure. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The partial shutdown of the federal government continues to have ramifications across the country, including inside Arkansas. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas says the shutdown was a big part of the Arkansas business and political landscape for the past week.
The federal government shutdown had a major impact on Arkansas's workforce, from the Department of Human Services to the Department of Health and other state agencies. Hundreds of state workers were furloughed as federal funding was put on hold. About 350 Little Rock Air Force Base civilians were placed on furlough, while the Arkansas National Guard halted certain operations, impacting up to 10,000 Guard members. On the 50th anniversary of the opening of the Greers Ferry Dam in Heber Springs, former President Bill Clinton addressed a large crowd who came to the rededication ceremony. Built for flood control on the Little Red River, the $46.7 million dam took 6 years to build, many decades to plan, and it encompasses 31,000 acres and roughly 285 miles of shoreline. It has led to millions of dollars in tourism for the Heber Springs region, which benefits from fishing, skiing, camping, and other lake-related activities. Bentonville-based Arves Bank Group and National Banking Corporation, the holding company for North Little Rock-based National Bank of Arkansas, said they've entered into a definitive agreement for Arves to own the bank. Terms of the deal were undisclosed. The sale is anticipated to close in the fourth quarter of 2013. Boosted by across-the-board September gains in all major revenue categories, Arkansas ended its first fiscal quarter with net revenues 4.2% above last year and 2.3% above forecast. State revenue officials reported that the rise in individual and corporate income taxes and sales and use taxes in September was encouraging, as nothing unusual accounted for the boost. Despite glitches in the new online insurance marketplace, Arkansas officials were encouraged by early participation. The federal government's marketplace website triggered technical problems for the state's online enrollment site, arhealthconnector.org, but insurance department leaders said they felt users would not be deterred. Hino Motors Manufacturing USA will expand its Marion manufacturing facility, adding 200 jobs and investing more than $55 million. The auto parts maker currently employs 350 at its Marion factory. Hino's presence in Arkansas dates to July 2004, when the company broke ground on its manufacturing facility in Marion. Through this expansion, the company will grow its capacity to manufacture axles, knuckles, and suspension components for Toyota's Tacoma, Tundra, and Sequoia models of truck. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business on Ozarks at Large is provided by the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to affordability and reliability. From the state's largest industrial user to the home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity: coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. It is Monday, October 7th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large, and with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good.
Get to talk about something else I love.
All right.
The Elizabeth Richardson Center.
50 years now?
50 years. And I get to talk about it in the context of they're bringing Jerry Jewell to town.
Yes.
For a celebration.
Yes.
The Richardson Center started in 1963 with four kids, mm-hmm. six kids. One or the other.
A handful of children.
A handful. Four children.
Okay.
Now they help more than 600
right.
kids and adults with disabilities. It was Wade Burnside.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Burnside.
Who thought, well, maybe we need to do this. And they found an experienced teacher who had retired when she got married but was widowed at that point and was ready to come back to teaching. Her name was Elizabeth Richardson.
Hence the name of the center.
And they started having these classes for kids with disabilities at First United Presbyterian Church in Fayetteville. And look what it's grown up into.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. And so to celebrate this, they're bringing in Jerry Jewell, who people know as Blair's cousin.
Facts of life, yes.
The first, she believes, the first primetime show, first primetime role for somebody with a disability.
Right.
Cerebral palsy, mm-hmm. which of course means intellectually not an issue.
Right.
But physically getting to do what you want to do an issue. And she got to do stand-up because she met somebody waiting in the Disability Support Services office at Fullerton Junior College in California who was blind and was doing stand-up. She said, I'd love to do comedy. He said, I tell blind jokes.
And she said, there's my inspiration.
There's my inspiration. She will be in town this week at 7 o'clock Thursday at the Fayetteville High School Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $20 general admission or $10 for students, celebrating a really good cause.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs. Marjorie Lawrence was born February 17, 1907, in Deans Marsh, Victoria, Australia. Her father played fiddle. Her mother was a church organist who died when Lawrence was only two. By age 10, Marjorie Lawrence was singing solo and winning vocal competitions. She first left home for Melbourne at age 18 to study voice. Following further voice studies in Paris, France, she debuted at Monte Carlo and later the Paris Opera. Marjorie Lawrence debuted at New York's Metropolitan Opera House in 1935. She became known for her physical performances. Of particular note was her 1936 role in Götterdämmerung, which saw her jump a horse through a ring of fire at the finale. Lawrence sang at the Met every year through the 1940 season. In summer of 1941, Lawrence was diagnosed with polio following a collapse while rehearsing in Mexico City. She and her osteopath husband moved to Hot Springs, Arkansas to work on her recovery. Lawrence received treatment at St. Joseph's Hospital and the Maurice Bath House. The couple named their nearly 500-acre property in Garland County, Harmony Hills. And Marjorie Lawrence did recover, both physically and professionally. Her initial return to singing was on the radio the next year. In December 1942, Lawrence returned to New York's Met, singing the role of Venus from Wagner's Tannhäuser while sitting. During World War II, she performed for thousands of soldiers with special concerts for the wounded. In 1945, she toured Europe, including a performance at Buckingham Palace. By 1947, Marjorie Lawrence was again able to stand while singing.
As a young girl raised in the bush country of Australia, Marjorie Lawrence dreamed of the time she would be a great singer.
An Oscar-winning 1955 film was based on Marjorie Lawrence's 1949 autobiography called Interrupted Melody. Eleanor Parker, who played Lawrence, was additionally nominated for an Oscar for her role. American soprano Eileen Farrell sang Parker's part in the film.
Not since the great Caruso has any motion picture presented the world's most beautiful music as it was meant to be heard. Not since the Stratton story has a life story been portrayed with such heartwarming romance, such emotional honesty. You'll see Lawrence, the brilliant personality, whose golden voice won the hearts of the world. Lawrence, the star, who at the height of her success on two continents, found the man of her heart.
You mean you'd give up all the rest of it just for me.
The film Interrupted Melody premiered at Arkansas at the Malco Theater in Hot Springs and also starred Glenn Ford and Roger Moore. Marjorie Lawrence hosted a television show in the mid-1950s sponsored by Coca-Cola. She began teaching and doing voice and opera workshops at Tulane and Southern Illinois universities, and during summers, Lawrence conducted voice workshops at her home in Hot Springs. She began teaching at Garland County Community College in Hot Springs in 1974, and the following year joined the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. Some of Lawrence's best-known roles were Salome, Tusca, and Carmen. But as a native Australian, her signature song, fittingly, was Waltzing Matilda, which she recorded several times, including among her final recordings in 1976. A commanding voice in opera and an inspiring figure in life, Australian and adopted Arkansaser Marjorie Lawrence died January 13, 1979, at St. Vincent Hospital in Little Rock and is buried at Greenwood Cemetery in Hot Springs. From Hot Springs in Garland County, here's Arkansaser and Australian Marjorie Lawrence singing Waltzing Matilda.
Under the shade of a coolibah tree, and he sang as he watched and waited till his beanie boiled. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me, waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me, and he sang as he watched and waited till his beanie boiled. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Jump up to drink of the billabong. Up jumped the swagman and grabbed him with glee. And he sang as he shoved that jump up in his tucker bag. Come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. And he sang as he shoved that jump up in his tucker bag. Come a waltzing Matilda. Up rode the squatter, mounted on his thoroughbred. Down came the troopers.
One, two, three. Saying, where's that jolly jumper you got in your tucker bag? You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Where's that jolly jumper you got in your tucker bag? You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Up jumped the swagman, sprang into the billabong. You'll never catch me alive, said he. And his ghost may be heard as you pass by the billabong. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me.
Marjorie Lawrence of Hot Springs with Waltzing Matilda. It's another song of Arkansas.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of KUAR and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer is Keith Merks. For more information, go to arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, the history of First Presbyterian Church in Bentonville. The church has been connected to the city every step of the way, and they'll celebrate that relationship on Sunday. Some great stories tomorrow on Ozarks at Large. Also on tomorrow's show, more details about this morning's announcement in Rogers that Redmond and Associates will open a new manufacturing and distribution facility in Rogers that will employ more than 70 people. Antoinette Grajeda will have that story on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. The Applied Sustainability Center at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas is hosting the Sustainable Communities Leadership Summit to offer conversations about ways cities can use sustainability as economic development. The summit is scheduled for October 15th through the 17th in North Little Rock. One session will highlight sustainability work in 10 Arkansas cities, including Eureka Springs, Fayetteville, and Harrison. Registration fee is $125, though nonprofit registration is $75, and students may register for $20. More information is available online at regonline.com/ASC Summit. That's a lot to remember. We'll have that link on the Ozarks at Large webpage today. Another reminder, the 2013 Franklin County Health Fair will be held Thursday, October 17th from 10 until 2 at the Arkansas Tech Ozark Campus's Student Services Center in Ozark. Healthcare representatives from throughout the Arkansas River Valley will be on hand to provide information and answer questions about their services. The event will also include free flu shots as well as screenings for prostate cancer and blood pressure and cholesterol tests. If you'd like more information, you can call 508-8203. Again, that's Thursday, October 17th from 10 until 2. Ozarks at Large, sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. Support for KUAF is provided by the 8th Annual Cherokee Art Market, featuring 130 Native American artists along with interactive cultural demonstrations October 12th and 13th inside the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tulsa. More information is available at CherokeeArtMarket.com.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, a father decides to try to do his 8th grade daughter's homework for a week.
The takeaway from it is that there is an awful lot of homework. And the content of that homework varies very widely, from stuff that's very thought-provoking to stuff that seems a lot more like busy work.
Next time on Here and Now, from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to KUAF Public Radio.
This is Ozarks at Large. Stephanie R. Marks is the author of Paula's Journal, Surviving Autism. The Bentonville resident is celebrating her 40th birthday this month, and she herself is autistic. The book is a work of fiction, but based on Stephanie's experiences as a nonverbal autistic woman. Because she is nonverbal, Stephanie created the book through the use of facilitated communication. In an email interview, Stephanie writes, "It was wonderful to discover facilitated communication because now she can tell people what she needs and how she feels." She says it was a difficult process creating the book, but she's glad she didn't give up. She came up with the idea for the book after learning to facilitate and after taking a creative writing class. Stephanie writes that she wants to help people with autism as well as those who care for people with autism. Someone who has helped care for Stephanie is her mother, Holly Fields. Holly recently stopped by Studio 123 at KUAF to visit with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. During their conversation, Holly explained what it was like to raise a daughter with autism decades ago.
Well, it was very different. I don't know that it was any easier than it is now, but you didn't have access to information. And the professionals in your child's life were not as aware of autism as they are now, or what to do to help children and parents both. Stephanie wasn't actually diagnosed with autism till she was about 17. She was in her late teens. She was undiagnosed. We knew there were difficulties that she was facing. We knew there were delays. She couldn't speak. I mean, lots of things going on, but even though when she was young, we lived in Houston and she had access, we had access to great medical facilities, I guess autism was still at that point where the information wasn't widespread. And so even though she was tested and all these things, they didn't diagnose autism at all, ever. So she went many, many years just sort of without her knowing or us knowing. And when she finally was diagnosed, it was actually here in Fayetteville. And she said it was such a relief. She said, you know, most people don't want a label, but she was relieved to know she wasn't crazy and that there really was a name for what was going on for her. So it was difficult because even though we didn't know she had autism per se, we knew that there were a lot of things she struggled with and things we had no explanation for and no one could explain to us. And so we were very much in the dark. And it was scary. And, you know, and sometimes just really disheartening that we couldn't get answers and couldn't get the help we needed to be better parents and to help her really move on with her life and you know, have a life and learn and do things. So,
what were some of the challenges that you had to deal with? Did she go to public school or?
She did go to public school. In Houston, she went to a self-contained classroom at a regular school. When we moved here, that was not available. She went to Sunshine School, which was totally separate and apart. She was one of the first students, though, who did enter the regular schools in Bentonville. There were, I don't remember, two or three students with severe challenges that entered the public school when she would be junior high age. And that was a milestone here, you know, and everywhere, really. Things just weren't done the same. And one of the things she tells people now is that she is angry about the fact she missed out on a lot of learning and that she had to pretty much teach herself or learn in other ways than in a classroom. After high school, she was fortunate enough to go to NWAC for and take several classes, and that was exciting, and that really gave her an opportunity she never dreamed she would have, and so that was wonderful.
And somewhere after being diagnosed with autism, I understand you guys learned about facilitated communication?
Yes. In fact, all of it sort of happened in and around the same time frame in her late teens. Facilitated communication was brought to us by a friend of ours who was actually a special education teacher in the Springdale schools. She had gone to Syracuse for continuing education and learned about facilitated communication there and was very excited to bring it back and try it with Stephanie. And there was just instant rapport there, which is somewhat unusual, but it was wonderful that she was able to introduce it to her and then also teach me. And that was just amazing to be able to communicate really for the first time in anything past just real basic, I need, I want stuff. But to have a conversation, you know, that was wonderful. And because of just routine testing with schools and things, she was finally seen by someone who was able to diagnose the autism. So it, I don't know that that was, that really wasn't because of the facilitation. It's just a lot more had learned, and this individual recognized the signs and the behaviors and things that made them believe she had autism.
So how does the facilitated communication work?
It doesn't work the way it looks.
Okay.
It looks like maybe you're trying to help someone, a type or point, but that's really not the way it works. And today, when they teach it, they try to teach people to encourage as much independence as possible. But for example, for Stephanie, I'll just give you an example. She has she can isolate her fingers and all to point to a keyboard, but she has great difficulty with the pressure and with going from letter to letter. So for Stephanie, what is important, and I admit it's less and less as she moves along, but what was important to her, very important to her at the beginning, was that after she touched a letter, you pulled her hand back away from the keyboard and gave her a lot of physical resistance so that she could then manage to touch the next letter. And so even though there was physical contact, the person facilitating isn't doing anything in terms of what's being typed. They're just trying to aid the individual in whatever way is needed so that they can type what they want to say. And the most amazing thing about Stephanie when she started is we realized she had a huge vocabulary and could spell and do all these things when at that point teachers were saying she maybe could read a few sight words and that was it. And so all of a sudden, you know, she's exploding with all this language. It was really amazing.
So do you need a special kind of computer or just like any old keyboard works?
Anything works. And Stephanie prefers actually a cardboard keyboard because she has a lot of pressure. And so it's harder for her to type on like a computer where she has to really concentrate on a lighter touch. Mm-hmm. So when she wants to have a conversation, she prefers just a cardboard keyboard. She's learning more and more to use a computer, and many people now use iPads and other tools and are starting out that way. You know, she's got a lot of bad habits, basically. The way it's taught now would encourage people to be able to use something electronic from the get-go.
Sure.
But that wasn't the way it was for her. In fact, this whole process was developed in about started just a few years after she was born and didn't really come to this country or to Syracuse, which I believe is still probably the leading educational institution that mm-hmm. has this available, until she was in towards her late teens. In other words, she was very fortunate that the lady she learned from was one of the first people to go there to study it. So a lot has changed. And they know a lot more about how to encourage people to be more independent
sure.
and need less physical touching or aid from someone else.
When you were able to have more of a reciprocal conversation with your daughter, were you surprised to find that she had been able to understand the world around her? Because I feel like oftentimes if someone is nonverbal, you sort of assume that they don't understand what's happening. Not necessarily that they do understand, they just can't communicate that. Were you surprised by that?
Yes and no, mm-hmm. in that I always believed there was a lot more going on in there than Stephanie could get out. For one thing, you could just see it in her eyes and places like, you know, that. And when you're watching a movie, she would laugh before everyone else in the appropriate spot. You knew she had reciprocal language. How much surprised me. The fact she could read like she did and could spell and do all these things certainly surprised me. But the fact that she understood didn't really surprise me. The depth of her understanding did. But I never doubted she didn't know some language. And one of the things was that she would read, not a lot, but I mean, she could always pick out her name and her sibling's name and different things if there were cards or things around. So I knew she had some reading. It was pretty amazing, though, to learn the extent of it and how intelligent she was and how deep thinking she was. But I guess if you sit around for whatever 18 years and can't really communicate, a lot's going on in there.
I would imagine so. And you mentioned that she got to take some classes at NWAC.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was a creative writing class, which sort of led to the creation of this book, Paula's Journal.
Yes. I wish I could remember her instructor's name. I believe she took maybe more than one writing class, but they really encouraged her, and she did well on the papers and things that she turned in. And somewhere along the way, she decided that she needed to basically journal more and then write a book, basically about her experiences in life, even though she wrote it as a fictional diary. It still has a lot of personal information.
I was wanting to ask you about that because I got to read the book, Paula's Journal, and the main character in the book is Paula. And when I communicated with Stephanie over email, she had said, you know, originally it had started out as Paul and then became a girl. And it's based on her experiences, but it is fiction. But it's based on her her experiences. So I want to ask about the train, that the train seems to calm her down. There's always that click-clack, click-clack, click-clack at the end of each entry. Is that true for your daughter?
Yes. And she loves trains. She loves to sit and feel the vibration of a train or listen to the rhythm of the train. And I think that is very one of the things that she finds calming and soothing. And she chose to put that between each entry because, for one thing, she was looking for something to kind of give the reader a break and refocus. So she chose that because for her it's a good thing. It's a soothing thing.
Well, what was the writing process like? I know with writers, you know, sometimes you might have a conversation with your editor or a conversation with a friend about where you want to take the story or what you want to do. But all of this is going to have to be facilitated for your daughter. She has to facilitate what she's thinking, but she also has to facilitate what she wants to actually have written down.
Mm-hmm. It was a very long and tedious process. It spanned about 7 or 8 years, probably, from the time she began till the time she was ready to let go of it. And along the journey, she actually wrote it and then had second thoughts about letting anybody read it because it was very personal. But she had, since it spanned such a long time, she had several different people that would help her, who would facilitate, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 different people facilitated for her. And because it's hard for her to facilitate on a computer keyboard, she would facilitate on her cardboard board. So then someone would have to write down what she facilitated, and later then, and very often it was me, the typist, who then would take that and type it so that she could come back and read it and reorganize or edit and start again. So it was a long, slow process. I would never have had the patience to complete that.
And when she was facilitating with the cardboard, which you brought me an example right here, so it's just a matter of her pointing to letters, and so you basically spelling out the word.
Yes, she spells out the words letter by letter, just as if you were typing on a keyboard, you would have to hit letter by letter.
Right, and this cardboard keyboard that you have here in front of us has, like a regular keyboard, has the numbers and then has the QWERTY style that we're all used to, but it also has the words stop, space, yes, no, and help me relax.
Yes, and those are just little shorthand spots for her so she doesn't have to spell out words like yes and no or space, which she doesn't always use normally. She just kind of hesitates between words. And stop and help me relax are words that help her control a little bit without having to actually type out a sentence that, you know, we got to quit for a minute. We got to stop here. We've got to let me regroup.
So what was, like you said, it took a long time to get it written, several years, and then decided to put it out there. So then there's a whole publishing process. Were you sort of the go-between for that? What was that process like?
Well, actually, I don't want to take too much credit there. Stephanie and her brother has actually a good friend that Stephanie had met who was an author and who helped do the research to find a way that Stephanie could do self-publishing. We had spent a long time sending work off and found out very quickly that that's a very hard thing to do, especially if you're not already published. And so this gentleman's name is Mike. He actually went through the process before he told Stephanie about the company she used and everything to make sure it worked. And he then shared all that information with her. And then I helped do some of that communication and everything on the publishing.
Well, what was it like for you to be able to read all of this knowing that it was inspired by actual events in your daughter's life?
Well, sometimes, you know, I would just smile and it would be wonderful. But then lots of times I would just go away and cry because of things that she was telling me that I had no way of knowing at the time when they happened, how they affected her, how she really felt. And some of them, some of the things that happened at school or when she was away from me and my sight, I didn't even know about. And there's, I don't know how many diary days are in the book, but there's probably an equal number she left out of the book. So she wrote a lot before she decided which ones to include. And I mean, there were things I learned about her life that were just heartbreaking. And then other things were just wonderful. You know, some of the challenges she met and succeeded on. And the thing I learned, I guess, most about my daughter through that whole process was how important it is for her to seek her independence and her own life.
And she's done that, no?
She's working on it. And I guess that's something we all work on forever, really. But she has definitely made a lot of headway and is doing things that I never thought were going to be a reality for her. I'm not sure. She may have thought so, but I didn't. You know, I'd worry.
By you reading this book, you learned a lot about your daughter, but what do you hope or what do you think that other people can take away from reading this?
Well, I think there's several things. You can learn a lot about autism and how it is to have to deal with the world when you have autism. The other thing that I know I took away from it, and I know it's very important to Stephanie, is accepting people for who they are at the core, not how they look or act or the fact that a baby crying may set them off or make them have to get up and leave a room or something, but to give everybody a chance to learn who they really are.
That was Holly Fields talking to Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda inside Studio 123. Holly's daughter, Stephanie R. Marks, is the author of Paula's Journal, Surviving Autism. The book is available at stephaniermarks.com or at Amazon.com.
This is folk singer Michael Jonathan. The Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour is coming to Eureka Springs for a huge double show worldwide broadcast. It's Saturday, October 26th at The Odd, featuring the legendary Michael Martin Murphy and Leroy Troy in the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band, plus amazing artists from across the Ozarks. For tickets, 253-7333. Or visit OzarkFolkFestival.com.
In celebration of its 50th anniversary, the Elizabeth Richardson Center welcomes Jerry Jewell, actress and disability advocate, to the Fayetteville High School Performing Arts Center October 10th at 7 p.m. Jerry received worldwide recognition as the first person with a disability to be cast in a primetime television series. Tickets and more information are available at 872-1800 or ercinc.org. Heine Vonker will perform tonight at 7 at St. Paul's Episcopal Church on the corner of East Avenue and Dixon Street in Fayetteville. This vocal ensemble from Estonia will perform ancient hymns and runic songs with a contemporary imagination. The concert is free, but donations will be accepted in support of ovarian cancer research. stpaulsfay.org or 442-7373 for more information. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Blue Eye. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening.